Hello everybody and welcome to NPC Cast. On today's episode, the guys talk about alignment in role-playing games. And as always, we tell you what we are excited about. It is April 12th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 15 of NPC Cast.
You are now listening to NPC Cast, your place for face-to-face games.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to NPC Cast. My name is NPC Chris, and I am coming to you from sunny Seattle, Washington. And as always, I brought a couple of NPCs along for the ride with me. Sitting to my immediate left is NPC Aaron. Aaron, how are you?
I'm good. There's like 3 feet there. Is that really immediate?
I mean, how immediate is immediate?
I think we leave this up to the listeners.
It's less than a swift action.
Oh, nerd.
Can you 5 foot step? Is the real question.
So, Aaron, how's the things with the thing that is going on?
Oh yeah, I have a kid now. Yeah. And he's awesome. And his name is Archer. And
Maybe after we introduce our next co-host, we can explain the plot that we've developed for this child.
Oh yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
But first,
from the frozen tundra of the north, we have NPC Del. Del, how are you?
I am fantastic. I was the one who devised the idea for Archer, so...
Why don't you spring it on everybody?
The idea is we get NPC Aaron and his wonderful wife and his adorable kid, and we take him out into the woods, and we have a little photo shoot when Archer's still real young of Aaron and his wife pulling Archer out of a crashed space pod, and then just hide that in the book full of normal family photos for the rest of his life until he finds it at some point.
Well, I got to make sure he finds it on his birthday because Archer was born on April Fool's Day. And at this point, I think I would just be a horrible disappointment of a father if I didn't have like a great prank for him every year, like 4 through, I don't know, the rest of his life probably. So I got to start saving him up because these long cons will be the best ones.
Yeah, the ultimate payoff. So that's great. If you want to maybe add some input to any of this story, which I mean is pretty much perfect. I can't think of a way to make it better. But if you guys can, you can get a hold of us, of course. My Twitter handle is @NPCChris. We have Aaron's Twitter handle is @NPCAaron. And Dell's Twitter handle is @NPCDell. Of course, you can also reach us via the show Twitter, and that is @NPCCast.
And on Facebook, at facebook.com/NPCCast.
Yep. And on Gmail, if you want to email us, you can email us at thenpccast@gmail.com.
I have some thank yous, too.
Yes, you absolutely do. Go ahead.
I have to thank, evidently, when you have a kid, people feel especially generous. So one of our listeners, Jonathan, left a $20 gift card for me at Card Kingdom with a note on it about how, you know, thanks, you know, good job having a kid and talking to me about games or whatever.
Good
I'm making
job.
It sound horrible.
Good job getting your wife pregnant and making her work extremely hard for 9 months while you sat back and just played games.
I know, I'm awesome. but he gave me that gift card. It was awesome. I felt pretty awesome they did that. And then just this morning, another one of our listeners, Elliot, messaged me to let me know that if I needed, like, baby clothes, he had a bunch of baby clothes. And I thanked him. I did not need baby clothes because everyone else I knew had just had a child graduate from baby clothes.
Right.
But the thought was awesome, and it's cool that we have listeners who want to support my fatherhood. So
yeah, that's awesome. That's it's really really cool. I mean, I was the one who was at Card Kingdom when the gift was dropped off, and I was beaming because it's like it's awesome that we have listeners out there that, you know, care enough about us to go out of their way to do really, really super nice things.
You say us, but I'm the only one with a gift card. I just want to...
Right, but I mean, if it wasn't for me, I could just replace you with like a robot voice and at any given point since I edit all the episodes.
I mean, you could.
Like right now, I could be talking to... I'll just dub over your whole audio with me speaking in like some Russian accent, and then I'll just reorganize the intro. It'll be fine.
Hello,
this is NPC Aaron.
Is good. NPC Cast is good.
Man. Can we just never, ever do that again?
Yes.
Okay, cool. on to the topic of today's show. And this is a topic that NPC Aaron brought up, and that is going to be the concept of character morality in role-playing games, specifically in regards to alignments, I guess, in general.
Yeah, I mean, alignment is the popular nomenclature.
Can you explain, Aaron, a little bit about like what alignment is to people who might not play role-playing games?
Well, given that D&D is the father of the system, it's in that system, alignment is a one-word or two-word phrase that encapsulates your character's morality, supposedly. But I've never thought it was that elegant, and we're going to talk about different ways that games since then have handled character morality and the expression of that.
Yeah, definitely. And this topic actually came up a few weeks ago at this point on Twitter when we were conversing with a fellow by the name of The Angry DM. And he sort of had posed a question of, or he didn't really pose questions. He just makes statements.
Not an inquisitive guy.
No. But he basically said, a paladin is lawful good, period. Like, that was the kind of end of his statement. And then he challenged people to sort of buck against that possibility. And so that kind of, we started talking about paladins at first, and then that got into alignment in general and whether or not it's has a place in modern RPGs, and that's what we're going to discuss today. So we're going to start off by explaining a few of the alignment systems that exist in current games. So let's go over first, I guess we'll start with Dungeons & Dragons. As Aaron said, it was the first system, obviously, that incorporated these alignments. At the beginning of Dungeons & Dragons, you had three basic alignments. Your characters were always considered good.
Yeah, so you only one axis of the alignment system was there, which is you were either lawful, neutral, or chaotic.
Right. And then along came, I guess, Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, and they incorporated another axis to the alignment chart. Del, can you explain to us how that sort of classical methodology of alignment works out?
So basically, there is lawfulness and chaos, or rather, you know, adherence to social norms and bucking of social norms, which becomes the law chaos axis, and then good and evil. And so you get lawful good, lawful evil, chaotic good, chaotic evil. And then there's neutral, and there's both neutral on the law chaos scale and the good evil scale for a total of 9. It's a huge boondoggle, and it belongs in the 70s where the rest of those abandoned, outdated technology originated as well.
That's kind of the rundown of Dungeons and Dragons. In the Palladium system, that's like Rifts and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they have sort of the same thing. It's not an exact gradient. They have basically a couple of good alignments, which they have principled and scrupulous, which are varying levels of good. They have a couple of sort of selfish archetype, and those are unprincipled and anarchist. And then they have a aberrant, miscreant, and diabolic to sort of cover evil alignment.
If your character is principled, he will never torture or kill without, you know, direct conflict. If he's unprincipled, he might torture, but never for fun. If he's diabolic, right, he'll torture and kill for fun.
Right. Basically, that's kind of the thing. So it's, but it's not as kind of black and white, cut and dry as the D&D alignments are. So after that, we have I guess the next stage of alignments was the World of Darkness, right? And Del, you know that pretty well.
Yeah, the OWAD system was nature and demeanor. Nature is what your true self and goals are, and it was usually a single word archetype like director, bon vivant, monster, something like that. And then the demeanors were exactly the same. So your nature and demeanor might be something like deviant as your nature, where you're just you want to let your freak flag fly in, you know, deep down. But your nature might be something like architect, where you're trying to build something, and what you're trying to build is a giant amusement park to kill the G.I. Joes. So they kind of worked. They could be at cross purposes, but they could also work together. NWAD kept the idea of that dual nature, but just used the 7 deadly sins and the 7 goodly virtues.
Yeah, because you have vice and virtue, right?
Right. And what was interesting about World of Darkness is I think World of Darkness was the first system the first alignment system or morality system that actually tied in-game rewards to playing your character, where it was the only way to recover willpower. Whereas D&D only had, you know, it was just prerequisites. World of Darkness had in-game ongoing rewards for satisfying your virtue and vice or your nature and demeanor.
Right. And that brings us to sort of what we're going to, I guess, basically stop at is like the current sort of alignment system that's in place now with a lot of modern games. And that's sort of based on the Fate system. So can you explain how the Fate deals with alignment, Aaron?
Well, alignment is essentially, I mean, it depends which Fate game you play, but it's going to be rolled into your aspects.
Right.
And since, you know, incorporating your aspects and challenging them interact with the Fate point mechanic, it's always going to be, you know, playing your character's like inner struggles is also like World of Darkness rewarded.
Right. And it's the same thing like for, I mean, we use Fate, but, you know, Savage World, you sort of have edges and hindrances, and some of those play into how your character is. Like, for example, my character in our current Savage World game is heroic, and that's a hindrance because he has to do sort of heroic things. So it kind of guides you the way you play, but it's not necessarily like a restriction. So that's kind of a rundown of the game. And we'll talk about some other sort of corner cases in the newer games like Robin Laws's Hillfolk. But let's stick to sort of those as kind of the litmus of everything and start to begin our discussion of the benefits and the minuses to these systems, starting with D&D. Now, Del, you were pretty adamant when you described Dungeons & Dragons that it was not something that you were a fan of. What do you think is sort of the problem with the way that Dungeons & Dragons deals with alignment, or the way that original Dungeons & Dragons dealt with alignment?
My problem with D&D's alignment system is the same problem I have with the World of Darkness system, actually, which is people write it down on their sheet and then use it to justify being jackasses. When, you know, you've rescued the princess and then, you know, the DM has her talking back a bit and the guy, you know, slaps her. And you're like, whoa, dude, you can't slap the princess we saved because that's really miscreant behavior. And you're like, oh, well, that's my alignment. It's like, no, you don't use your alignment to justify your actions. You act in a way that is in keeping with the tone of the game. If the DM says, hey, we're going to play like a Firefly, Millennium Falcon type game where everyone's kind of anti-heroic and, you know, a smuggler, then you make characters appropriate to that. If you're playing high fantasy Rescue the Princess, everyone should be making characters who are good because that's what the story says they are. You know, it's definitely a communication problem if the DM does not communicate that you need to be making good characters, not, you know, we need to be making Captain America, not Wolverine. You know, we're making Thor, not Punisher.
Most games, I think, can have both, all of those. I think a party of Punisher, Thor, Wolverine, and Captain America is probably pretty interesting based on the inner party conflict.
Yeah, I mean, if you take that to the extent, you know, a party of Thor, Punisher, and Galactus wouldn't work very well together.
No, they wouldn't, and not just because Galactus is thousands of times the size of all of
It'd
the other characters.
It'd just be awkward. Like, where would, like, how would they, like...
They'd be inside Galactus.
Who gets shotgun?
But my argument is I have experienced so many roleplay experiences where people use their alignment to justify being jerks.
Yeah, I mean, I think that alignments in general, I believe are misconstrued. And I think that's why a lot of people have, or the bad stuff that people have to say about alignments, I think is because alignments are generally misused by both players and GMs. Because to me, an alignment, all an alignment should be, in essence, if done right, is a classification of how your character generally responds to things based on the way that character's personality is or the way that character's background is.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything like inherently wrong with any of the alignment systems. I think, though, that when you then give them to people, in general, people react to some of them in a way that is like Del is saying. So I also hate when the alignment is then further extended, in the case of D&D, into the game system, when there's like a detect evil spell. And I have to be like, oh, you know, does the, like, the sheriff is a little corrupt. Does the detect evil spell, like, rout him out? Or when you, you know, you can only play a lawful good paladin or a lawful monk or a chaotic barbarian. I don't feel the need to, like, place those restrictions. Those restrictions are things the DM should be able to place if he feels that the area you're in, like, you know, maybe all of the barbarian tribes there are, you know, chaotic or something. But
here's something to think about, and it's actually great. Willem Dafoe, the actor, had the greatest shtick or spiel about alignment ever, and he didn't even realize it was about alignment. And they asked him, you know, what do you like playing better, heroes or villains? And he said, it makes no difference to me. Everybody thinks they're the hero. So, you know, it's not a matter of evil or good. Everybody thinks they're doing the right thing. Only demons and extraplanar beings who are celestial ideals of things are truly good or evil.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll probably get into, like, the idea of evil a little bit later there. So I agree with that to an extent, though. The problem I have is that, you know, most players read the little blurb, maybe. They read, okay, I'm chaotic good. That's Robin Hood. And then, you know, that's all their character ever is. It's confining to people to try and use such a narrow mechanic. I think that's two words long. And that's why modern games have moved towards, a different way of doing things. I think even looking at the World of Darkness system is a huge step up because it represents inner conflict, which is one of the things that makes a game most interesting. Like in our game we're playing right now, Chris's character is good, but he did smother his former boss with a pillow when his boss was, you know, acting so far out of line. And then it's, you know, he's tortured because of it. If you only played your alignment on the sheet, you would never smother that guy with a pillow.
I mean, I'll come out right out and say I think that alignment as the traditional model is not necessary in modern games. I think for different reasons. I have no problem with there being a paladin archetype who's a holy avenger who needs to be good to be able to have his powers. What I have a problem with is that when you restrict yourself, and again, I think it's because people are misusing alignments in general, but you know, when you write your alignment down on a sheet, it restricts you to acting accordingly, right? And I guess for me, the most compelling characters that are in fiction that I can think of, and that's even, you know, modern television shows or films or, you know, books, they are conflicted. Like, for example, let's look at Lancelot, right? Lancelot is like a symbol of chivalry. You know, he would theoretically be lawful good. You know, he's a virtuous knight. At the same time, he had an affair with Guinevere, and that affair affected him. So he ended up going on his Grail quest and, you know, accomplishing these tasks to redeem himself. But at what point did his alignment shift?
Yeah, I agree. And there's no, I think either. If you're going to represent it mechanically, you need the modern approach is like so much more elegant, like Fate or Hillfolk, Robin Laws's game, which is based on that kind of conflict, or what we talked about last week, which was the Spark RPG, where the whole point of the game is to build your character's beliefs and then challenge them.
Mm-hmm.
That those kind of things make for more interesting games. I've noticed it in the games we're playing. Our characters are far more interesting, in my opinion, in the newer games we've been playing as we've kind of, you know, come to the realization that people don't always act one alignment. You know, I've had my standard day, which would I like to think is somewhere around neutral good, but, you know, I've had my neutral evil days. I've had totally neutral days. You know, I don't know if I've had a lawful evil day yet, but someday maybe.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And my point to that goes a little bit towards sort of role-playing in general. Because I find that when you ask someone, you know, their opinion of what makes a skilled role player, like a skilled, someone who role-plays their characters really well, 9 times out of 10, it seems as though at least in the past, 9 times out of 10, it has seemed that the person who is most who adheres most closely to their alignment or to their character's beliefs. But with really compelling stories, the characters that occasionally stray, despite their best intentions, from their established beliefs are the ones that I actually am compelled to follow and compelled to root for. Because when Walter White starts out as a family man who, you know, begins to break the law to provide for his family, but then eventually he just makes all those decisions that you wish he wouldn't. Like, you wish, you're like, please don't, I want to like you. Please stop doing these things. But he does them. And you can tell that it affects him and it affects the show and the character in the long run. And that is what I think modern storytelling or modern RPG storytelling is lacking.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Walter White goes from timid to terrifying over the course of that show. Spoiler alert, I guess. I mean, if you've seen a poster for the show even, but haven't seen it, you could tell. And that's kind of what's interesting to me, I think, is that as, like in Fate, a lot of times your character's aspects will change over the course of the game, and the aspects are where alignment is hidden. And I think that your alignment mechanic, your morality, is inextricably woven into your backstory and then the current story. You know, that's how it should do. And those mechanics need to interact. So a lot of games that don't really have an emphasis on backstory in their generation, like D&D, which, you know, has the standard questions, but it's not like the Dresden Files RPG where, you know, you do a lot to build your backstory. Mm-hmm. It's harder to, you know, a lot of times you build a D&D character and then you look at it when you're done and go, he's unaligned, which, you know, is our new neutral, I guess. But that's not how, like, you build characters in, like, the really rich systems where it's a process.
Right. And I think, though, that Delt spoke to it a little bit about World of Darkness. And I think that sort of began the trend towards these things, because a lot of game designers now, you know, they are coming up in the world where, you know, vampire existed. You know, these are like, so they're able to build on sort of the shoulders of giants in that aspect. And I think that the more we go forward, the more you'll see systems that, if they decide to include a morality system inside the rule book, it will be based on awarding people for acting in accordance with their sort of convictions without restricting them from acting outside of their convictions.
Yeah, there's I want to step outside of face-to-face games for a second. The Mass Effect series of video games actually handles alignment a lot better than I've seen a lot of tabletop games, and certainly any other computer game where your choices are Space Jesus or Space Hitler. The Mass Effect system basically gives you the option to be expedient or careful, where you can take the quick way or the virtuous way. And it never explicitly paints you as good or bad, but merely gives you the option between two equally efficient ways of doing things. And never, the important thing is it never stops or closes off any part of the game due to your alignment, which is something that, say, a circle of protection from evil might.
And another thing is, like, a lot of the mechanic of paladins falling has always been interesting to me. But the problem is it's in a game that's heroic fantasy, and it's not necessarily, like, the greatest place for it, because in a game where all of a sudden your ability to do the main thing you do, like, totally goes away, and then you have to trudge through doing that thing and it's just not fun to do anymore, is not great. But the idea of losing, you know, some boon and then having to redeem yourself works great in kind of a deeper, more intrigue or more inner conflict based game. Like in a world like Game of Thrones, that story arc is awesome because there's, you know, you're not running around killing orcs, but in a world like Forgotten Realms, it's just a horrible hindrance that probably makes your character unfun.
That is a sort of a table to table way to deal with it. And when I brought up this point to the angry DM, I said, well, you know, using Lancelot as an example, I'm like, at what point did his alignment change? Did he change back? Is he now, you know, now that he has realized that what he did was wrong, Is he still lawful good? Because he still wants to be lawful good. His character, like his convictions are leading him to want to be that way. He just performed one action that wasn't that way. So where do you sort of, where does it, the line go at that point? Again, I have no problem with the system that says we have a Holy Avenger class that has to be good to have his powers. Just as I have no problem with the system saying people who are virtuous would not use necromancy or would not be able to benefit from those powers. You'd have to, you know, do whatever to sort of flavor that however you will. I don't have any problem with that. What I have a problem with is something that has classically been used as a restriction. I mean, in a lot of ways, if you ask people, they'll say that, you know, people who are still, you know, firm believers in the Dungeons & Dragons alignment system will say it is always meant as a classification. But the problem is that you have the way the rules were intended to be used, which is as a classification, and the way that because of the way the system is built, the way they're actually used, which is a restriction.
A real good litmus test of whether or not a gaming group is for you is if the potential DM of a group you're thinking about joining in a face-to-face game brags or is in any way excited about that time he made the player's paladin fall, you should just turn around 360 degrees and then moonwalk away because it's pretty much a perfect litmus test. If they are excited about taking away a player's powers because of some arbitrary rules that the player wrote down on a sheet, it's probably not going to be the group for you, because if you're listening to our podcast, you're obviously brilliant and educated and beautiful players interested in having fun.
I mean, my horror story with alignment, and this has sort of soured my taste from way back when, is happened in a game I was played, and these are with good friends of mine, and you know, I'm still friends with these people, so it was no hard feelings, but it was just sort of annoying at the time. And it was a group of four of us in this party. Three of us were good. One of us decided he wanted to be an evil character. The problem with that is that an evil character can act good. And they can act good for as long as they want, because they're evil and they're not dumb. They're not going to just go around killing babies, because that's not what smart villains do. They conceal the fact that they're evil until the most opportune moment. As a character who doesn't know that the person I'm adventuring with is actually evil and I'm good, I'm going through and doing heroic things and helping everyone survive. Eventually it gets to a point where we've been going on for a few months playing this game and we are faced with this horrible villain. So of course our evil player turns on us and he's like, okay, well I'm going to like now side with the villain. My character gets incapacitated. At that point, the evil character says, well, you know, perhaps we should let him live and he'll like learn the error of his ways. And the villain looks at him and then shakes his head no, and just coup de grace me and my character dies. And me, the player, was like, well, dude, you were playing an evil character. What did you expect to happen? Like, you just wanted to play this ultra badass, like, evil dude who could do whatever the hell he wanted at any given time. There's no restrictions. And that sort of ruined the way that we played. In a system where, you know, you have such a black and white evil and good, those kind of things can really get in the way of actually making compelling stories.
You and I were talking about systems that don't have an alignment mechanic.
Yes.
Specifically, we're talking about the Fugue system, which is the system for Las Vegas, mm-hmm. Which if you haven't listened to the episode with James Wallace, A, you should, because it's awesome, and B, essentially your character's skills and abilities are revealed through flashbacks triggered by you or the other players or the GM. Either, you know, unintentionally or probably, you know, intentionally, those flashbacks are also going to reveal something about your character's morality. The interesting thing that you and I are talking about is that you don't have to, that doesn't have to be how you are now post amnesia, mm-hmm. because you have amnesia in this game. But it does affect the way you play, because now something is said about you. Either you are still that type of person. James Wallace's example was, if you needed a gun skill, you could bring up that time you knocked over a corner store, and now you have the gun skill, but we also know that you're the kind of person who would knock over a corner store. You can still be, you know, the thug, or you could disassociate yourself and be like, I can't believe I was the thug. But either way, you're building the morality of your current character through those flashbacks. And I think that some systems that focus on story and background obviously don't have need of a specific like alignment word.
To me, that is a system that helps you generate backstory. And I think the difference is that at no point is your character married to their backstory. At any point, you know, my character, who's been, you know, a cop on the beat for, you know, 10 years, can all of a sudden decide to murder someone else in cold blood because of some reason. And now technically he's evil or whatever, right? But his backstory was that he was a cop, or, and now he's not. So for me, that's what I was talking about, was I personally feel that games should get away from restricting morality through the system, award people for going with their convictions, and focus on building up that backstory. Because the backstory in general should lead you to the alignment that you're at. You shouldn't ever say, I'm going to make a chaotic evil character. You should say, here's what happened to my character. Here is why he is chaotic evil.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think the idea is that with the background is that people are the sum of their experiences, or essentially the difference. In the case of the cop, like, you can react, you know, in a way that is predictable, or you can react in a way that is unpredictable, but is still based on the experiences that you had in some way. And so that's why, you know, those experiences are bigger than two words.
Right.
So here's the thing, and this actually came up yesterday, is as a DM, when you want to be able to be prepared for the choices your characters make, is it useful to have that two-word statement? Is it useful to have some kind of words that you can write down or look at and see to kind of, you know, think about how characters might react and be prepared for that? Do you find it useful, Del?
Not at all. Like I said, I think it's a complete waste of time. And what we're really talking about is descriptive versus prescriptive. When you have a system like a Las Vegas where your actions determine your alignment, that's great. But at that point, the alignment is just a summation of your worldview. When you have a system like D&D where your alignment determines your actions, that's exceptionally uninteresting and unfun. If you know that, you know, I mean, even from an in-world point of view, if alignment is a real thing, since there are circles of protection from those things, if I know that a paladin is lawful good, I'm going to use that against him in every way I can as a villain. And, you know, that's not fun or interesting when characters have hard and fast rules, or the players are making choices for their characters using hard and fast rules rather than making decisions based on how their character feels and what their life experiences have taught them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the counterpoint to that, though, and I do understand what you're saying, Del, but for me, the counterpoint is that we have no way of knowing, for example, Trado the Thief, right? Trado the Thief, I imagine, is chaotic good or whatever, because I really like chaotic good. But so Trado the Thief is chaotic good, right? We have no idea how he grew up. We have no idea what he, you know, has done or hasn't done, or what he's experienced. So when I say Trade of the Thief is chaotic good, what I'm trying to say is that he has proven in his life that he falls on the chaotic side of law, but he tends to be good-hearted. That's the summation of the decisions that that character has made before he's gotten to the table. Now, where it gets tricky is now if I say my character will always be chaotic good, he will never follow any laws, and he will never do anything that's even remotely evil, then that's when it gets restrictive.
Yeah, and I think that sort of elemental idea of like what the alignment words mean brings us to the thing that I want to talk with Del about, and the Willem Dafoe quote about it's especially painful in like evil characters, because people create bad guys or play evil characters that are just like
puppy kickers.
Yeah, they're awful. When in reality, you know, that's not how most villains are. And the few villains that are like that, who are an elemental force of evil, who are like, you know, the Dark Knight version of the Joker or a serial killer, like evil villains, they're no longer special because all of your villains were evil. And I think it was the Dungeon Bastard had a big speech on Twitter about how the best villains are the villains that, like, you get to watch their transformation from, you know, when their virtue was before it was corrupted. One of the best things to do to your characters to make them really want to take down a bad guy is to introduce an ally, build him up as a trusted friend, and then corrupt him. And your characters will want to take care of that threat far more than whatever, like, you know, dark evil overlord was, banding all the monsters together. Easily, they'll be way more inclined to deal with that.
Right.
Basically, what this whole conversation boils down to is alignments are used, have been used poorly in the past, and they will continue to be used poorly in the future. But they can work for certain games as long as they are baked into the system and used to help players define themselves and define their characters rather than as a set of, tablets etched in stone determining what your robot that you are piloting will do. And I think we all agree that the best thing to do is to have if there is a morality system in a game, to use it to help elucidate other players where your character's motivations are coming from, rather than to use it as a cudgel where it defines everything about the choices you make.
And yet, despite Del and I's feelings about all of our misgivings about traditional alignment things, in spite of all that, what are your guys' favorite alignments to play? Do you have an alignment that you gravitate towards?
Okay. Almost every D&D character, like literally almost every D&D character I've made, unless I had to make them because of the rules, some other alignment, has been chaotic good, because that's just my personality. It's like I want that sort of roguish, like the guy who's going to like be super sarcastic and like, not follow the rules, but still is.
Just say Han Solo. It's a lot faster.
I don't know. I guess a Han Solo with a sword, because mostly I played fantasy RPGs.
Mal Reynolds.
Mal Reynolds is Han Solo if he lived in Cowboy Bebop. I hope we didn't lose listeners with that.
I think we just gained about a billion.
Is that derogatory?
Yeah, we...
No, we just gained like a billion.
Did this turn into a Big Bang episode or something? I'm really... Oh, Big man. Bang Theory.
Hello, Penny. I have Asperger's. Raucous applause!
Del, what is your... what alignment do you gravitate towards?
I gravitate towards lawful neutral. I think... first of all, Modrons are awesome. As much as I dislike D&D as a setting, sometimes every so often something so goofy and perfect comes out that it becomes awesome. But I really like lawful neutral as an alignment, the RoboCop alignment, where everyone pays the exact same price. Kind of, Judge Dredd is the pinnacle of lawful neutral. I think it's really fun to have somebody who is obsessed with carrying out the law with no exceptions, good or bad.
Yeah, I could see that. I actually have never wanted to play Lawful Neutral, but then when you said it was Judge Dredd and I thought, oh, it is Judge Dredd, I was like, now I kind of want to play Lawful Neutral. Mine's actually Neutral Evil, because I think Neutral Evil is the one of the three evil alignments that's generally like believable evil. Like, you are out for yourself and power, and you don't really care if anyone else gets hurt.
So Han Solo.
Han Solo is not every alignment.
Han Solo pre-meeting Obi-Wan. Han Solo when him and Boshek were doing the Kessel Run together.
See,
I would even argue that that's not super... I mean, like, super honestly, like, out for themselves to the point that I don't care if anyone else... Like my character in our Rogue Trader game, I viewed him as neutral evil. In that he has a goal, and he doesn't really care if anybody else gets hurt accomplishing it. But he's not, like... gonna run around, he's not chaotic evil, he's not totally out of touch with the world and its rules around him. He still has to operate somewhat within those guidelines, so that's kind of my preferred alignment in a lot of games.
Yeah, I don't know, it's funny because you guys mentioned those things, because I actually see those elements in other characters. I mean, the thing with Han Solo, just I think that really highlights the entire point, where it's like at any given point you could look at Han Solo and say he is this or that or this or that, and it would all fit, and you can make an argument for any of that. Speaking of making arguments for what alignments people are, let's go down to a list. We all wrote down a few names, and we're going to reveal characters or people in the real world, and we're going to tell you, we're going to discuss what we think their alignment would be in D&D terms. Aaron, do you have a person or a fictional character or a person that you would like us to determine what the alignment is?
The Incredible Hulk.
This is what? Which version of the Hulk is this?
Not Bruce Banner. Bruce Banner's clearly,
Hulk, Gray Hulk, Tri Hulk.
This is
a Green Hulk. Original.
The original
Incredible Green
Hulk.
Hulk.
Okay.
Chaotic neutral.
Yeah, I would have to say chaotic neutral. I think.
But you don't think at the end of the day he sides like a bit more with good than with evil?
Well, depends on how he's depicted. A lot of times he is literally a monster that's not controlled. That goes crazy.
The thing I take away from chaotic neutral is not that they are totally capricious. It's not, you know, I know chaotic neutral gets a bad rap and everyone hates the chaotic neutral guy because he's just, woohoo, look at me! But so much of the Hulk is defined by what has happened to him most recently. Then whatever happened to him most recently is how he reacts. If he's currently being shot by tanks, he reacts by throwing tanks at people. If he's currently, you know, being licked by a puppy on his hand, then he will sit down and look at a flower. And chaotic neutral characters are governed. What?
No, it's fair.
I like the if-then reaction of if being licked by a puppy, then sit down, look at flower.
Mm-hmm. That's how I function.
What's your first one, Chris?
You guys should figure out the alignment of the Cookie Monster.
Ooh.
He's sort of almost Hulkish. Like, he is kind of, he's like the Hulk, but with cookies.
I would say chaotic evil.
Really?
I think Cookie Monster has exactly one thing on his mind, getting more cookies in his mouth, regardless of how much damage he's doing to his, you know, his pre-diabetic body. And he will go after people and take cookies from their hands.
This is before he learned that cookies are a sometimes food?
Yes.
Because I heard that he learned that. I'm going to say he's chaotic good. He has no regard for the way the world is around him. But at the end of the day, when Cookie Monster, you know, messes something up eating all the cookies, at the end of that, you know, segment of Sesame Street, he usually ends it like learning a lesson and feeling regretful. So I'm going to say in the end, he's good, and I would go chaotic good.
I mean, I saw a clip where he just lied to Kermit consistently to try to get a cookie. So, I mean, is that what a good person would do? Just lie until they're given a cookie?
I haven't seen this clip, and I don't believe it exists. And I say we stop slandering the good name of Cookie Monster.
We don't want a lawsuit. All right, Eric, Del, you got another one for us?
Yes, I do. Me.
NPC Del.
I knew this was going to come up.
I knew somebody was going to pick you. You were actually on my list of five, but I decided not to pick you.
What is your alignment? Now, this is your alignment based on your day-to-day.
Yeah, how I act, you know, when I'm not in character at the table, but when we're just hanging out or doing other stuff or playing Takedo.
During Takedo, you are chaotic evil. The rest of the time, I would say that, Del, you are lawful evil.
You're going to go evil? You're going to say Del is evil?
I mean it in a nice way.
Yeah, lawful evil is not puppy-kicking evil.
Yeah, I'd say you're lawful evil. I'm going to settle on that. I don't want to explain it too much because I want to still be friends, but I'm going to go with lawful evil.
See, I would go with, like, neutral good. Like, well, maybe chaotic good. Or maybe neutral, maybe... I don't know, man. That's tough.
I will say Aaron is probably closer. I know that, you know, when I play Magic, when I'm sitting at the table across from my opponent, I pile shuffle their deck to count it, and I'll call a judge, even if it's an FNM against a 9-year-old. If they have 59 cards, I'm taking that game win.
Last week you said you didn't do that kind of stuff.
No.
Well, that was him lying because he's evil.
No, I take every advantage available to me within the bounds of the system, but I don't cheat. So lawful evil is really, really accurate.
Okay, Aaron, what do you got?
Sorry to shatter your worldview, Chris.
No, I was trying to be nice.
I was going to do a joke one of Captain Crunch, but then you picked Cookie Monster, and so you kind of beat me to that boat. So I was going to say, because we're talking about it, let's do Taylor Swift.
Oh, man, Taylor Swift.
How many listeners can we lose with this segment of the podcast?
I will say neutral evil.
Oh, how is she neutral evil?
I don't think that she actually cares about anyone but herself. She's been in like 19 relationships with a bunch of gorgeous, rich, adorable boy band members, and she can't stay in a relationship, probably because she's awful and selfish and doesn't care about anybody else's happiness, only her own.
I mean, she knows what she's doing. She's definitely calculating because She knew that he was trouble when he walked in.
Mm-hmm.
She even says that. So,
what's she doing now? Lying on the cold, hard ground?
And she doesn't care. She doesn't care that you're lying on the cold, hard ground.
I'm glad. I don't know enough of those lyrics to even join in on this, and I'm glad. I'm proud of myself for that.
All right, let's just forget that that ever happened and do your last one.
Well, my last one was going to be Taylor Swift's ex-boyfriends.
Oh, well, they're probably good-hearted rogues.
Yeah, lawful good.
They're lawful good for sure.
I have another one, though. What do you guys think is the alignment of Walmart?
Maybe not even lawful evil. Chaotic evil? Because then they just disregard the law and then, like, lobby to get it changed if it conflicts with them.
Yeah, I'm going to say chaotic evil as well. They're pretty much the worst thing.
The worst.
So we did throw away another sponsorship this episode, so we're definitely on a roll.
Well, I was hoping to get sponsored by Taylor Swift, too.
Oh, okay.
So we're through away, too.
Oh, okay. I mean, clearly, Del and I still know all the words to the song. So.
We're going to pick up the Cookie Monster endorsement. We are very pro-cookie here. I never said there's anything wrong with wanting cookies.
Okay, well, that's fair.
The directors did, because they neutered him, and now he wants vegetables and cookies sometimes.
Well, cookies is a sometimes food, so.
All times are sometimes.
Yeah, not in my world. It's an all-the-time food.
All right, well, with that being said,
I need to go get my insulin shot.
Let's get to the things that we are excited about this week, and we'll do that right now. Okay, so we will get to the things we are excited about portion, and we'll go ahead and start with me, I guess. This week, I had the chance to go up north, not quite to the frozen tundra of the north, not quite into Dell's area, about halfway between civilization and Dell, and I got to play a game with Chris from the Twisted Geeks podcast, and we played Star Wars X-Wing. Now, Star Wars X-Wing is a Fantasy Flight pre-painted minis game. Obviously, you're based in the Star Wars world, and what it does is that you do the Star Wars combats. Now, it is based on another Fantasy Flight game, Wings of War. A lot of the rules are taken from there, to some controversy because the creator of Wings of War hasn't been entirely credited properly in the new game. But there's a lot of differences as well. The basic structure of the game is you have your ships. You can have X-Wing. You can have the Millennium Falcon. You have TIE Fighters. And all your ships are piloted by different people. Anywhere from, I think, for the Millennium Falcon, you can have it piloted by Chewbacca, Lando, Han Solo, or generic rogue smuggler in the same ship that is the Millennium Falcon. And so the ships kind of have different ratings based on that and points values because of that. So it's really cool when you buy, you know, the Millennium Falcon, you get a wide range of points that model can represent on the table. After you put all your models on the table, you're kind of, beginning to set up. The game is basically broken down into three phases. First, you will choose what your movement is going to be. So you have a dial that you keep secret until it's revealed, obviously. And it will say, like, I'm going to move to take a sharp turn to the right, or move directly ahead three, or make a gradual turn to the left, or what have you. And so you kind of plot out where your ships are going to go. And then in the movement portion, when those are revealed, you have movement markers, and they're all cardboard cutouts, really nice, high quality, you know, Fantasy Flight makes awesome components. So you have these high quality, like, movement markers that you put down. So if you're moving straight, there's a straight one, and you put it in front of your ship, and then you move it to the end of that. So you don't really need measuring tape or anything. It's all in the components in the games that tell you where you move. Really cool. After that, there's a small phase of, like, in the middle where you can kind of pick what maneuvers you're going to do. You can pick if you're going to focus, you know, someone using the force or whatever. And then in the third phase is when you actually shoot. So you measure to see if people are in your front arc and if they're in range, and then you can shoot at them. And the way the mechanics go is you have there's special dice that come with the game. There's attack dice and defense dice. So, for example, the Millennium Falcon doesn't have that many defense dice because it's not agile. You can't really dodge very easily, you know, a TIE fighter that's on your tail, but it has a lot of shields to compensate for that.
She may not look like much, but she's got it where it counts.
There you go. And then, for example, the TIE fighter is very, very agile, so it has a lot of defense dice, but obviously can't take that much of a hit. It's really cool. I mean, we learned to play it in an evening, and yeah, like, when you play most games. We made some mistakes, but for the most part, it was really, really fun. We actually played with two huge forces because Chris has like almost all of the miniatures. I think there's two sets that they sell that are kind of hard to come by right now, but we had most of them. So we had, you know, a whole bunch of X-Wings, a Y-Wing, Millennium Falcon on one side, and the other side had a bunch of TIE fighters, and then it had Slave One, piloted by Boba Fett, of course. And at the very, very end of the game, it came down to Luke with one shield left in an X-Wing versus Boba Fett with one shield left in the Slave One, and Boba Fett actually killed Luke. So the only surviving model on the table was Boba Fett. Earlier in the game, Darth Vader had been killed by a Y-Wing, and I think and the Millennium Falcon was destroyed by Boba Fett in the Slave One. But it's a really good introduction to minis games if you guys are thinking about it. The basic core set just comes with one X-Wing and two TIE fighters. And then they sell the additional pieces in like blister packs that you can get as well. Like I said, all pre-painted, really nice components. I definitely recommend checking it out. It's pretty fun.
I'm kind of interested in it now. I'm generally turned off from things licensed from Star Wars. I like Star Wars, but I'm not in love with it. Like, I don't want to play it and live it all the time.
Right.
So I'm generally like not. And this new wave of like between that and Edge of the Empire, like, is making me change my alignment on the whole issue.
Oh, you're going to the dark side?
Yes.
Oh, nice. Yeah. The thing I like about it, though, is because I also am not. And I'm sorry, but I'm not that huge of a Star Wars fan. I like it well enough. You know, I understand people that do. I'm not that big into it. But the mechanics of the game are really solid. And you can tell that it plays like a sort of World War II fighter, you know, pilot plane game. Because the way the maneuvers are working, they're not like zero gravity maneuvers. They're like sweeping long turns and stuff like that. But it works really well, and I enjoy it a lot. And then, you know, Dell, you don't have to paint anything, so that's a plus as well. But Aaron, why don't you talk about what you are excited about this week?
I am excited to go home and continue to read the playtest rules that Kenneth Height put out for his, what he called, Bubblegum Shoe. Mm-hmm. It's his new game that uses the gumshoe system. It's a teen noir setting, so if you've ever watched Veronica Mars or the movie Brick, that kind of thing, where you're investigating crimes that are usually of a pretty dark adult nature. I'm sure you could play like Harriet the Spy if you wanted to, but you're in a teen setting.
Harriet the Spy. That's a good reference. Go on.
Is that going to be on the soundboard? Just Dell out of nowhere?
Probably.
Harriet the Spy. But, continue. You know, in general, you know, the idea is to investigate something that maybe the local authorities have overlooked, and your, you know, group of, you know, high school, probably. I'm guessing you're probably going to draft towards the usual, like, caricatures of high school cliques for the most part would mm-hmm. probably make the best game. Has to solve a crime. And I like Kenneth Height, and Brick is one of my favorite movies of all time. So I was instantly like, oh, I'm going to read that and then try and convince my friends to play that setting for 3 years before they finally give in and do it.
Yeah, I'm a pretty easy sell. But my question is this, though. So when you say that they are solving crimes that are the authorities have overlooked, I mean, are these crimes like who rigged the prom king vote, or is this like who murdered Samantha?
Well, I'm sure you could do both. My games would go more towards who murdered Samantha, in that, you know, the police suspect her boyfriend, who, you know, is the rebel, you know, and troubled, but you, being friends with Samantha, know better that it was something else that went on. But I don't think, from what I've read, that it restricts you to doing either. If you want to play, you know, who kidnapped the school mascot or something, I'm sure you can do that as well.
Can we do a TPK of this where we all play characters from The Breakfast Club?
I think we have to.
Yeah, that's another thing that when you say it, it has to happen. So I'm going to email Kenneth Height and let him know that's going to happen so that he's okay and writes off on it. But yes. And
I'll call Molly.
You're Molly Ringwald.
Oh, crap. Now I have to play Molly Ringwald. I was going to say, I'll call Molly on the phone and get her to come down. Okay. Me and her are really close.
But no, you have to be Molly Ringwald. I'm going to be Judd Nelson, I think.
That's, oh my God. Might as well be Wolverine. Get out of here, Judd Nelson, Breakfast Club. You're such a rebel. Del, speaking of TPK, what are you excited about, sir?
I am excited that we are going to get going to Gamma World. Yep. We have a Gamma World TPK session coming up in a couple days, and I have been having the time of my life rolling up characters for you guys because Gamma World character generation is totally random. There's already a Ghost Ooze, which I don't know how you guys are going to flavor that, but I'm going to present the character sheets to you guys along with a couple cards with their powers on them, and it's going to be up to you to come up with a name and a justification for why one of you is a wheeled cow.
Oh, wow.
And even though it's the, you know, the...
Mutron rules all.
Oh my gosh. This is going to be awesome. I'm excited to play.
Yeah, it's...
I've never played Gamma World, the setting, but I've seen it, and it looks awesome.
Yeah, and what's super cool is that it's built on the backbone of D&D 4th Ed, so it's super familiar, and technically it should run nice and clean, but it's so goofy and just unapologetically so. It's like the fun parts of Fallout rather than the Deathclaw parts of Fallout. And I'm just... super jazzed. I haven't been behind the screen in a while, so this will be good for me.
Yeah, it'll be good to get out of your system. I would play with in a game that you ran any day, Del. Oh. I'll let you know that. Any day.
Except for like
Thursdays, because we got the podcast.
Yeah, we do this.
The whole podcast thing. Yeah. And then pretty much every other day I'm busy, yeah. But we'll figure it out. Anyways, I think that's going to be it for the show. This has been a long one. I'll have to edit this down. But don't worry, listeners. By the time you hear this, it will be only the cream of the crop. You won't even know that we recorded this over the course of 5 hours and 2 days.
Yeah, by the time you hear it, there'll only be 3 alignments left.
And Del's robot voice throughout will be great. So that'll be fun too. Anyways, thank you so much for listening. You can add 1,000 XP to your character sheets, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
NPC Cast is written by Chris, Del, and Aaron. You can reach us on Twitter at twitter.com/NPCcast or by email at thenpccast@gmail.com. As always, support your local game store.